I don't know if I'm inspired more by you who come here to learn. This is already our fourth day of seminary. Some of you have been here for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. Or the amazing speakers that we've had. We've had Rabbi Chaim Marcus, we had Rabbi Schechter spoke, we had Rabbi Malitsky yesterday, we have Rabbi Liebus today, Shani Terrigan this afternoon. And what inspires me about you is your commitment to learn. You could be on vacation now, you could be doing whatever people do on vacation in America between college and between camp, but you're here to learn, and to learn Torah and to grow. And these speakers inspire me so much because they're very busy. These are people who have a lot of Klal Yisrael issues on their shoulders, and they're finding time to come and to teach you Torah. And I assume it's because not only do they value you as individuals, but also as future leaders of Klal Yisrael. And Rabbi Leibowitz is no exception. I'm not going to say too much, but Rabbi Leibowitz is the Rav of the Beis Knesset of North Woodmere. He's also Magid Shir in NYU, and the head of the Smicha program, and the Mechaber of a number of Sfarim, which I was blessed to receive as a present from his son. And so we are truly, truly thankful and truly, truly blessed to have Rabbi Leibowitz here with us. Thank you so much for your
thank
time.
Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi Teretzky. Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming to learn together this morning. I, too, find it very inspiring that that all of you are so interested in coming and learning Torah. And what an impressive array of speakers. I didn't even know who I get to be associated with, but obviously it's always a great cover to be associated with Rabbi Teretzky, and I thank him for running this in, this entire program for the benefit of you and for the benefit of Lahagdil Torah Lahadir. So Rabbi Teretzky told me that the theme is Kedushas HaDibur, or things that relate to speech. Now, typically when you think about speech-related topics, when you think about those halachos and hashkafos and behaviors that relate to how a Jew is supposed to speak, our minds instantly go to Lashon Hara. Now, Lashon Hara is bad. The Chafetz Chaim wrote 2 books about it, and we have a lot of, you know, lesson a day, and a lot of, and it's very important to work on Lashon Hara. It's a tremendous Yetzer Hara. I once actually had an opportunity, several times actually, when I was teaching in DRS. There's a high school not far from here, a boys' high school. So when I taught in DRS for 18 years, and we used to take a trip for several years, probably 6-7 years in a row, we would do the same trip for the 11th grade. We would go to try to show the Talmidim different parts of the Jewish people. You know, different types of Jews. So we'd go to Ner Yisrael to see like what a somewhat yeshivish Jew looks like, and then we'd go to Lakewood to see what a very yeshivish Jew looks like. We'd go to YU so everyone could see their older brothers, and a couple of times we went to Lakewood, and we had the opportunity of sitting in Rav Matisyahu Solomon's house. Rav Matisyahu Solomon is a mashgiach in Lakewood, and I remember it was always right before Shavuos. The trip was always right before Shavuos, and we always went from Rav Matisyahu Solomon's house to paintball for some reason. I don't know why that sticks out of my mind, but that was just strange. But sitting in Rav Matisyahu Solomon's house, he used to ask, every year he would say the same thing to us. I guess he has like a go-to speech from our Orthodox kids. So he would ask the Talmidim the following. He would say that, it was right before Shavuos, so he would say, we all know the Medrash, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, went to all the nations of the world and asked them if they would receive the Torah, if they would accept the Torah, and they all said, Maksivba, what does it say in the Torah? And each one had something that was too challenging for them to accept, that they couldn't imagine accepting a code of law that's going to limit them on that level, on whatever the Nakuda was that the Ribbono Shel Olam chose. But Klal Yisrael, we said, Nasa V'Nishma, so we never even challenged, we never even asked, we were just willing to do it, and we're going to learn more about it later. So Matzio Solomon turned to the boys and he said, And if we would have said Maksivba, if we would have said to the Hashem what everyone else said to Hashem, what does it say in the Torah? And Hashem had to pick that one thing that we would find something that's impossible, that we could never possibly do. What would Hashem? What did He have prepared for us? What would the response have been if we would have said, Hashem, what does it say in here? And Hashem wanted to give us the most challenging thing that a Jew is going to say. I just can't do that. You know, we only didn't get that far because we never challenged Hashem. We just said, Nasa V'Nishma. But Hashem was obviously ready with something. What would it have been? So guys suggested different things. Rabbi Matisyahu Solomon always said, it's Lashon Hara. Definitely HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have said Lashon Hara, and we would have said impossible. We love to yenta, we love to talk, we love to talk about people, we love to, it's just impossible for us to not speak Lashon Hara. But obviously, it is possible, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah, and he expects us to observe the Torah, so it is possible. And not only Lashon Hara, there's Ona'as Devarim, when we talk about the type of speech that one should avoid, Ona'as Devarim sometimes doesn't get enough attention, or as much attention as it should, because in certain ways it's even more damaging than Lashon Hara. Ona'as Devarim is just stam, when you say mean things to people, when you say nasty comments to people. I was sitting at a bar mitzvah recently, and there was on a Shabbos Suuda, and there was a fellow sitting next to me, probably around my age, maybe a couple of years older than me. I'm 44, so he's probably 45, 46-year-old guy, and he was talking to me about, he was reminiscing about his high school years, that he went to a particular high school, and he said, he was telling me how he used to wear a suede yarmulke with bobby pins that would hold his yarmulke in place. And in his high school, that was not acceptable. The mashkiach used to come over to him every day and tell him, bobby pins are simlas isha. You're not allowed to wear bobby pins. Bobby pins are only for girls. And when he was telling me this, I could see the anger in his face, the resentment in his voice, 30 years later, that the Mashkiach went over to him, and that's what he had to pick on, that's what he had to, every single day, to bother him about something so trivial, something so meaningless. When people say things to you, it sticks sometimes. There are people that will remember from 30 years ago and longer what hurtful things that they were told. So in general, when we speak about speech, that's typically where we go. We go to the kind of speech to avoid. We go to Lashon Hara, we go to Ona'as Devarim. But I want to take a turn in a different direction. I think it would be even more productive and more helpful, more beneficial for us to instead focus on the power of positive speech, and positive speech very much connects to positive thinking. Positive speech is an outgrowth of positive thinking. And what inspired me to do this is a little field trip I took with my Talmidim from the YU Smicha program last week. 6 days ago, on Wednesday, I had the opportunity to take about a dozen Talmidim to Brooklyn for a few hours, and we stopped by two places. There were two stops on the trip. First stop was by Rav Asher Weiss Shlita, who was in America for about a week, and then the next stop was in Yeshiva Torah V'das by Rav Yisrael Reisman, who's one of the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Torah V'das. And actually, both of these stories did not happen on the same day. And we then had an opportunity to have Rav Asher Weiss in North Woodmere last Thursday night. And let me tell you an exchange that happened on Thursday night between someone and Rav Asher Weiss. Rav Asher Weiss did a question-answer session on Thursday night with some of the chevra from the neighborhood in North Woodmere. And there was an 18-year-old boy who had just gotten back from yeshiva, from the Shana Aleph in yeshiva. And he raised his hand to ask a question. The whole thing was a question and answer session, so he raised his hand, and he asked Rav Asher the following. He said that he was in Meron on Lag BaOmer, and he said he was so broken after seeing the things that he saw. He saw way too much. He saw things that people should never have to see. And he said that he felt so broken afterwards. He didn't want to connect with Hashem during tefillah for several weeks. He didn't want to talk to Hashem. And he's never felt that way before. And he asked Rav Asher Weiss, what should I do with such feelings? Now, this is a very sensitive boy. This is someone who obviously feels terribly that he doesn't want to connect with Hashem. On the one hand, he doesn't want to connect with Hashem because he's angry, or he's sad, or he's upset, or something. And on the other hand, he feels so guilty and he feels terribly that he doesn't want to connect with Hashem. So Rav Asher Weiss brilliantly, immediately pivoted. And he said, let me ask you, have you ever been angry at the king of Thailand? It's an odd question. So the boy said, no, I've never been angry at the king of Thailand. He said, and have you ever been angry at your mother? And he said, yeah. He said, who do you love more, the king of Thailand or your mother? He said, well, obviously my mother. He said, sometimes when we're angry, it's a sign that there's a real relationship there. You don't have a relationship with the king of Thailand, so you never would be angry at the king of Thailand. The fact that you're angry at the Ribbono Shel Olam and you didn't want to connect with him? Maybe that's a sign of a building block of something positive. Maybe that tells you that there's a real relationship that you have with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And sometimes in real relationships, people get angry. And I was just so moved by that response, because he took something that was an absolute negative in this young man's mind, and he immediately turned it into a positive. What the boy was feeling so down on himself about, Rav Asher Weiss, in a moment, turned it into this great positive. That's a building block. That's a relationship. And I think that's a very critical thing, that if we're going to speak about speech, we have to speak about thoughts. Because thoughts are where speech comes from. Speech are a way that we articulate what is already going on in our head. And if we're going to speak about thoughts and speech, we should speak about the positive side rather than the negative side. When we're positive people, we tend to be much more productive people. You know, after suffering through 22 years of terrible consequences of favoring a younger son over an older son, back in Sefer Bereishis, one would think that Yaakov Avinu would have learned his lesson. So after seeing how favoring the younger sister over the other as his wife had this corrosive effect on his entire family dynamic, you would think Yaakov Avinu would have learned his lesson. And yet, when it comes time to bless Menashe and Ephraim, what does Yaakov do? He once again, he gives the younger child this extra affection. He again makes the same mistake that ruined his family. The same mistake that ripped apart his entire family. And Yosef, who was the beneficiary of that extra affection, and it landed him in an Egyptian jail cell, tries to stop him. But Yaakov insists on going forward with it. How could he keep making the same mistake over and over again? So I remember years ago when I was teaching in DRS, one particular year I had a number of Talmidim who were outstanding B'nai Torah. They were doing very beautifully in 11th grade, but all of them were making summer plans that I thought were not going to be the best for their ruchnius. So I needed to, and they weren't going to listen to me. I needed like a secret weapon to come in and sort of convince them to change their plans or to think bigger, to think about how they can grow during the summer, how can they become better during the summer. So it happened to have been my cousin, my first cousin, Rav Netana Leibowitz, was in, anyone know my cousin? Some of you, maybe, okay. So my cousin Rav Netanel happened to have been in America at the time, and I said, Netanel, you got to speak to my class. They don't want to go to NCS Waikolo. I need them all to, so you got to come in. So he said, okay, you know, like if everything's okay, you know, no problem. So he quoted a Yerushalmi at the time, and the Yerushalmi says, Gadol Kiddush Hashem Mechilul Hashem. You know what's even better than Chilul Hashem? Kiddush Hashem is even better than Chilul Hashem. Okay, Shkoyach. I need Yerushalmi to tell me that Gadol Kiddush Hashem Michil Hashem. It's a statement of the obvious, if there ever was one. What deep insight is the Yerushalmi telling us? And he suggested that we tend to fixate on Chilul Hashem. We tend to fixate on the negative. When something goes wrong, when somebody's not doing what they're supposed to be doing, we tend to focus and complain loudly about what's not right in the world. Kiddush Hashem, on the other hand, that doesn't really grab our attention quite as much as Chilul Hashem. You know, someone does some sort of crime and he's a front person, he's on the front page of the newspaper or whatever. You know, everyone fixates on that. But Kiddush Hashem, yeah, you know, that just is. And we don't give it enough focus. We overlook it. Gadol Kiddush Hashem Michilul Hashem. The Yerushalmi is reminding us that the goodness within good is better than is more powerful than the badness within bad. Or to use the expression Chazal used, Mida Tova Meruba. Goodness is a stronger force in this world than evil is. It's worth our attention when Kiddush Hashem happens. People in general have a tendency to complain when something doesn't go their way, but they tend to fail to acknowledge when something good happens. And we act this way in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and others. If you think back to like the two or three times in your life where you had the most intense tefillah experience, the most passionate tefillah, the tefillah where you felt like you were so connecting to the Ribbono Shel Olam, how many of those tefillahs were in response to illness, to war, to other difficulties, challenges, travails, and how many of them were about new life brought into the world, a family simcha, you know, a change for the better. And that's just the way we tend to work. we tend to reach out to the Ribbono Shel Olam when things aren't going well, because we think things should go well. So when they are going well, we just say, yeah, that's what it should be. But we're not inspired by that. And if we learn to see positive and be inspired by positive, we'd connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam in positive also. I was once talking to a Rebbe in the yeshiva who was in his first year on the job, and he asked me if I heard anything about him. I said, what do you mean, have I heard anything about you? He said, like how I'm doing. You know, it's my first year. I don't know if I'm doing well or if I'm not doing well. No one's told me anything. I said, then you're doing well. Because if you weren't doing well, somebody would have told you something. That's just human nature. When you're not doing well, someone's going to tell you something. When you are doing well, no one's going to say anything. I remember when my kids were young, one of my children came home from school one day, and he said that he got a positive behavior card in yeshiva that day. I had never heard of a positive behavior card, that there's such a thing, that they give, instead of just a note that you did something wrong, or a detention, or whatever, a positive behavior card. So I was so excited to see what's going to be written on the positive behavior card. And on the positive behavior card, it said, he didn't run or scream in the hallways. That is not positive behavior. That is just not negative behavior. One has to learn to look for positivity. There's a big difference between not behaving in a negative way and actually behaving in a positive way. So back to Yaakov Avinu. So Yaakov's favoring Yosef, and then Ephraim really had nothing to do with their age. It had to do with their attitude. In Yaakov's assessment, surviving the challenges of life, particularly life in Galus, in Yaakov's assessment, it demands a focus on the positive. See, Reuven is given his name. Why is Reuven called Reuven? The Chumash says, Ru'u ma bein bini u ben chami. Look what Reuven isn't. You know, my father-in-law had two sons, and the oldest one was Esav, but my oldest son is not Esav. When you're defined in the negative, it's very, very difficult to be a leader. Yosef is given his name because Yosef Hashem Li Ben Acher. He's a Hosafa. He's an addition. He's about the future. He's about building. He's about what comes next. Reuven's defining moment, his great moment, is when he saved Yosef. Except he didn't actively save him. He stopped him from being killed. He stopped a terrible negative from happening. Yosef's defining activities by his dreams of grandeur, whether they were appropriate or not, but he was dreaming of something bigger. He was dreaming of being in a better place. He was dreaming of doing bigger things. And even when faced with brothers who made his life miserable and almost killed him, Yosef says, Hashem chashavani letova. Hashem had good plans for me. He's gracious. He chooses to look at all the good. He could have focused on all the negative and told them how evil they were, and how they forced him to being a slave in Egypt. And when faced with the problem of 7 years of famine, what does he do? He doesn't try to fix the famine. He tries to say, you know what? All the positive is going to outweigh the negative. We're going to take those years of plenty, and they're going to be big enough. The good is going to be big enough to outdo the bad. The positive is going to be big enough to dull the effect of the negative. Yaakov chose Rachel because Leah's greatness was in her desire to stay away from Esav, that she wasn't interested in being with Esav. Rachel's greatness is in what she does in a positive way. So now he's faced with two grandchildren. One of them is named because he represents how Yosef was able to forget as Kol Amali. Nashani El Kodesh Baruch Hu allowed me to forget all the difficulties in life. And the other is named because Hifrani Elukim. Hashem has given me success and allowed me to build an empire. Yaakov says the power of positive is always going to outweigh the power of negative. It's true, we have a sur meirah, and that's critical in Judaism. But the aseh tov, the positivity, always has to be what's emphasized. Rav Asher Weiss commented in that same question-answer session, I've forgotten the name of who, it's a famous quote, but I'm forgetting the name of who, that, you know, while Chazal say, Smol doche yamin mekareves, that the left hand pushes away and the right hand pulls close, and sometimes both hands pull close. Meaning small, at most smol doche, but sometimes it's both hands that push close. And that brings me to Rav Yisrael Reisman Shlita. Last Wednesday, as I mentioned, we went to Yeshiva Torah V'das, and Rabbi Reisman was generous enough with his time to sit with the YU Smicha Talmidim, and just to answer questions. And I asked the final question. I asked him, as an outsider to the modern Orthodox community, what's his perspective on what the future rabbis should be working on. I mean, I said all of these guys are going to be serving as rebbeim in modern Orthodox schools, probably. They're going to be rabbis in modern Orthodox schools. So we know from our own great rebbeim in Baruch Hashem, you know, Lo Alman Yisrael, we have great leadership, we have great gedolim that guide us. But it's all from the inside. So as an outsider, as someone who sees things from the outside, which, in a way, I guess I was asking him to say Lashon Hara about the modern Orthodox, like, what's wrong with us? Tell me what's wrong. But he wouldn't take the bait. He said, I have Talmidim that are Rebbeim in schools where people are, the Talmidim are maybe not as observant as you would hope they would be, or not as as engaged in Yiddishkeit as you would hope they would be. He said the goal is to make sure you see the positive in every kid and you see the potential in every person. He said when he started teaching, his great Rebbe, Rav Pam, told him, I know you're going to start teaching now. I have the following advice for you. Do not teach Gemara. Do not teach Tanakh. Do not teach Halacha. And he's like, where is he going with this? He says, teach Talmidim. That you're teaching people. You're not teaching a subject. You're not teaching things. You're teaching people. And he said, my advice is, if you're going to be in Chinuch, see the positive in everybody. And then he remarked that he said he was going through some old journals of someone had brought him. There used to be a scholarly rabbinic journal called Hapardes, where everyone wrote up their drushas and essays on different Torah topics. And he was looking at a Hapardes from the 1950s in America. And he was looking at all of these drushas that all of these rabbanim wrote. And he said, half of these drushos were about how the world is falling apart and conservative Judaism is on the rise and no one's a ben Torah in America and America's a midbar and everything's negative here and everything's bad and we need to be better because all this is terrible and everything. And he said, and half of the drushos were like, look, we're alive. We're alive after the Holocaust. The Ribbono Shel Olam gave us life. And he gave us the opportunity to have freedom of religion and to do things with it. And now we're establishing day schools throughout the country and we're doing things and there's a future for Klal Yisrael. Half of the drashos, he said, focused on the negative, half focused on the positive. And he said he noticed a common theme that all of those drashos had focused on the negative. When he looked at the names of the people who had given those drashos, the people who had written those drashos, he said, I didn't recognize any of the names. And when he was looking at the positive drushas, the people who were thinking positively, who were thinking about what we could do, what we could accomplish, he says, those were the builders of America. Those were the names that we remember. He said one name that just stuck out was Rabbi Teitz, Zechar Levracha, from Elizabeth, who built an entire community and a school system and everything else. So he said, those were the people that we know. If you want to be a builder, if you want to be a person that makes a real impact, it has to be with positivity. I thought that was such a powerful message. Let's talk a little bit more about that. How does one develop? How does one get rid of bad habits? So the truth is, to get rid of bad habits, you never get rid of a bad habit. The way to get rid of a bad habit, the way to get rid of averos that we do or things that we do that maybe we're not so proud of, is by building good habits that are stronger than the bad ones. This is both borne out in the Torah itself and in psychological research. The Medrash comments on the first pasuk in Parshas Bechukosai. Chashavti darkei v'ashiva ragli alei dosecha, Amar David. B'chol yom ha'yisi omer l'makom ploni ani holeich v'yuraglei malichos osi l'batei k'nasiyos. That David HaMelech says, every day I would say, well, I have this to do, I have that to do, and every day somehow I find myself in shul, I find myself in the batei k'nasiyos, in the batei midrashos, I find myself in makomos of kedusha and places of great holiness. So David HaMelech always starts out his day with an itinerary, like many of us do, with a plan of where I'm going to go. He's king of a country here. He probably has a full docket of important meetings all day. The president's schedule is like worked out to the minute. If he's, this person gets 30 seconds and that group of people that are coming to visit gets 4 minutes and everything is worked out to the minute. He probably had a lot of important things, military strategy planning, cabinet meetings. But in the end, he always somehow ended up in shul. His feet carried him to shul. And the idea that a busy king found time for davening and learning, it's really wonderful. It's inspiring. But what does it have to do with Bechukosai Teilechu? It's a medrash on the pasuk Bechukosai Teilechu. Of all psukim to associate appreciate the lesson of David HaMelech. Why dafka in b'chukosai teilechus? So there is a marsham. The marsham explains that there are many tasks that people do throughout the day with varying degrees of difficulty. And one would think that the more difficult the task we do, the more it would require to accomplish the task, the more energy, the more effort. The reality, though, is that that's not true. Meaning, take the following. Backing out your car from the driveway before backup cameras, right? Or even with backup cameras. Backing your car from the driveway, how long does it take you to do? Remember the first time you tried backing out your car from the driveway? No? And then you realize you're in drive and you almost broke through the garage door, or you did, right? It's a complex task. Like, you have to look back and see who's behind you, make sure no one's behind you, and wait, am I turning the wheel the right way, but it's the left way or the wrong way? I'm not sure what's going to happen with the car. But now that you're seasoned drivers, you're back at the car from the driveway like that, nothing, it takes 2 seconds, it's nothing. It's not because the task isn't complex that we do it so easily. You know, it is complex. Estimating the space between the driveway and the parked cars on the street, estimating the angle as you turn the wheel, check that no cars are coming, and then there's a person walking their dog because everyone's got a COVID dog, right? So and you have that to worry about also. And fidgeting with your seatbelt and the radio, whatever. And yet, we do it in like 2 seconds, like nothing. Threading a needle, on the other hand. Threading a needle is a very simple task. It takes me about an hour to do it if I had to do it. All it is sticking the needle, right? It's nothing. For most of us, it takes longer to thread a needle than to back our car out of the driveway. Why? Because when we form habits, we're able to do these tasks without even thinking. When there's something that we're not used to, it takes focus, it takes effort to accomplish. Neurologists have been able to identify brain activity associated with habits, and they found that an old habit never really dies. It never goes away. It's just overpowered by newer, stronger habits. I was just here this morning. We were doing the Beis Din for Gior. We were meeting some candidates for conversion in one of the other rooms. There's a lot of rooms in this place. And one of the people, one of the very impressive candidates, is dating a guy who grew up from. And like he said, I hadn't been to shul in over a decade. Till he met this non-Jewish girl who said, well, if I'm going to marry a Jewish guy, I want to know more about Judaism. And as often happens, she brought him back. So what did it take for him to be able to figure out the Siddur again? Nothing. It was 2 seconds. He hadn't been to shul in 10 years. He knew all the words. It didn't go away. It's hardwired into his brain. Even though he abandoned it, to the point that he was dating a non-Jewish girl, he abandoned it. But it's hardwired into us. We're able to identify that. They are able to see this on brain scans. A person who habitually smokes will always have that habit. How do they overcome it? By developing new habits, by developing positive habits that are stronger than the old habits. They've discovered that developing a single positive habit can have a domino effect on the rest of a person's life. A person who begins to exercise, even just once a week, will inevitably also eat healthier. Because now they're a healthier person. Now that's just the way they think. They'll improve their hygiene. David HaMelech was a busy man. He had a lot to do. He started each day by saying, Yisi Omer L'makom Ploni Ani Holich. I have this agenda to take care of. I have this meeting to go to. In order to keep everything in focus, he had to plan it out. But it never became a part of him. It never became something that he does easily. When it came to Ruchnius, though, Vayu Raglei Melichos Osi L'Batei Knesios, he allowed the Ruchnius to become that which happens automatically. The Ruchnius became driving, backing his car out of the driveway. His feet would just carry him to shul. His natural inclination, without even thinking, was to end up in a Beis HaKnesses or a Beis Medrash. The Torah tells us that brachos come when b'chukosai teilechu. It's true, when we have a tochacha, we read about all of these terrible, terrible curses. How do we overcome those terrible curses? Just with a few brachos, a few psukim of brachos. A few psukim of positive, and it outweighs so much negative. You know, we just read a few weeks ago the story of the Meraglim. You know, you talk about Lashon Hara, and you talk about Diburim that we have to avoid. So the story of the Meraglim is the classic story of Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael. And of course, the great heroes of the story are Kalev and Yehoshua. And there's something strange about their heroism in that they lost. I mean, they put up a kind of a fight. Kalev sort of put up a fight. Yeshua, not really. And they lost. Klal Yisrael bought into what the other 10 Meraglim were saying. Kalev had a lot of courage. He single-handedly took on 10 most important men alive and insisted, Alona Alev, Yerashno Soki, Yachol Nuchala, we could go, we could take over Eretz Yisrael, we could be victorious. The very next pasuk says, Va'anashem asher alu imo amru, lo nuchala lo salam, ki chazaku mimenu. The next pasuk, they already outvoted him. They said, no, we can't. Not able to do it. They outshouted him. They swayed public opinion right back in their direction. One pasuk later. We can't do it, they said. It's impossible. I read once that Derek Jeter said that when he was growing up, Derek Jeter used to be a baseball player, shortstop for the New York Yankees. Okay, he said growing up, he wasn't allowed to say the words, I can't. He wasn't allowed to say those words in his house. There's no I can't. There's I haven't figured it out yet. Still working on it. You know, but there's no I can't. And the Meraglim were like, we can't do it. We're not able to do it. Remember, one of my children had this particular challenge with negativity and thinking that he can't do anything. So I decided to take a page out of the Jeter's playbook, and I said, you're not allowed to say the words, I can't. You're just not allowed to say those words. Those words are out of bounds for us. So he would always say, I am not able. Okay. The question becomes, so did Kalev really accomplish anything? He got them for like a second. Did he accomplish anything? So he saved himself, because now Kalev is not a villain of Jewish history. But why is he a hero? He didn't even do anything. The Jewish people suffered for 40 years in the Midbar because he wasn't able to influence the people. So there's Nebuchadnezzar that comments that Kalev did accomplish something. He quieted the people for a moment. At least that moment, that 1 second where they're like, oh, maybe we can. Until the Meraglim came along the other 10 and said, no, we can't. That one moment, he had them. And that moment could have been a moment where there were 3 million people thinking negative thoughts, but for that one moment, there were 3 million people thinking positive thoughts. And they were thinking, you know what? Maybe we can do this. Maybe God is on our side. It was reversed the very next moment. But a moment of a Kiddush Hashem is also a moment. If a person has the ability to make a Kiddush Hashem even for just a moment, even if it's a quickly forgotten moment, we've accomplished something. Small actions matter. Brief moments matter. Kalev was rewarded. He's a hero, not for making a lasting impact, but for making a momentary impact. And that counts for something too. He's called Ben Yefuna. Why? Chazal tell us not because his father's name was Yefuna, but because he's a Ben Shapana Me'atzes Meraglim. A lot of times when you have names, Ben so-and-so, it doesn't mean that that's the person's parents' name. Like, I get calls for Shiduchim all the time about boys who I've taught. So they'll say, describe him to me, which is a very hard question, by the way, to answer. Like, encapsulate an entire person in like 3 sentences. Like, you know, so describe him to me. So he's a Ben Torah. So what does that mean? His father's name is Torah or his mother's name is Torah? When he says he's a Ben Torah. No, Ben means it is what he is. That's how he defines. That's his essence. So he's Ben Yefuna. Chazal tell us because why is that his essence? Shepana me'atzas meraglim. He not only turned himself away from the eights of the meraglim, he turned everybody away from the atzas meraglim for 1 second. And that counted too, because a positive moment is positive also. Rav Yerucham Olshan, one of the great Rosh Yeshiva of the Lakewood Yeshiva, of Beis Medrash Gavoa in Lakewood, points out that the primary sin of Lashon Hara is not really about the telling of the gossip. You know, the pasuk says, "Mia isha chavitz chayim ov yom lirastom nesol shon chmeira." And everyone always focuses on the middle of the pasuk and the end of the pasuk, but leaves out on the beginning of the pasuk and the end of the pasuk, and conveniently leaves out the middle of the pasuk. We always say, "Oh, mia isha chavitz chayim, who's going to be someone who desires life nesol shon chmeira?" Don't speak Lashon Hara, then you're a Chafetz Chaim type of Jew. It's not what the pasuk says. It says, Ohev Yamim Liros Tov, first. Ohev Yamim Liros Tov. A person has to Liros Tov, to see good in people, to see good in situations. A Baal Lashon Hara only became a Baal Lashon Hara because he's able to find the negative, like a fly swarms around garbage. So he sees something and he's just like attracted to negativity. And then he expresses that negativity. You know, Reb Chaim Brisker gave the mashal that, you know, sometimes when there's a controversy, when there's a machlokas, when there's something going on, there are people that are involved, that are very involved in whatever controversy is going on. Reb Chaim Brisker gave the mashal, he said, imagine there's a mouse in your home. The worst possible thing to imagine, right? There's a mouse in the kitchen. So there are two beings that are in the kitchen that are reacting to it. You, the person, and the cat. You have a cat. You see the mouse, you grab a broomstick, you're trying to chase the thing out of there. I remember when I was in Keren Biavne, we had a mouse problem in our caravan. They gave us a caravan, and there was a mouse problem. So we told the yeshiva, we have a mouse problem. So they sent a guy with a long beard, and I seem to remember he was just wearing like robes. I don't know why that's, and a broomstick. I'm like, I don't think he's a licensed, you know. but the so you with the broomstick and the cat, you're both chasing the mouse, you and the cat. But what are you thinking, or what's the cat thinking? Right, you're thinking, get this thing out of here. This is the worst thing ever. I want this out of my house. And what's the cat thinking? Lunch. Fantastic. You're both running around like Meshugayim after the mouse. But one of you is so excited and one of you is not happy about this situation at all. Some people, when they see negativity, they get agitated by it and they're upset by it and they have to get involved sometimes. But they're like the balabastos trying to chase the mouse away. They don't want the mouse to be there. They don't want the negativity to be there. And some people, when they see negativity, they're like the cat. They're like, oh, juicy controversy. Lunch. That's what's gonna keep me going. A Baal Lashon Hara finds the negative. The Nesivus explains the pasuk in Mishlei, "Einechal enochach yabitu v'afapech yashir negdecha," to mean that if you start looking at other people's faults, it's important to reorient ourselves. Afapech, your eyelids yashir negdecha, should look at ourselves negdecha, at yourself instead. When we recognize that we're flawed also, maybe we won't see so much negativity in other people. You know, the Rambam has an astonishing formulation of the Isra of Lashon Hara in the beginning of the seventh parak of Hilchos Deos. The Rambam writes, Hamiragel b'chaveiro over below sase. Should ever lo say lechrachil ba'amecha. That if you're miragel b'chaveiro, you're in violation of a lo sase. Now, you want to describe someone who speaks ill of someone else. Lo say lechrachil ba'amecha means speaking lashon hara. How would you describe that? You're what b'chaveiro? I would say hamesaper b'gnusa shel chaveiro. Someone who speaks evil of someone else. No, hamiragel. What's miragel? Well, we know what miraglim are. What are miraglim? Spies or scouts. Right? Their job is to see what's going on over there. To start assessing, to start looking, to start finding. Hamiragel b'chaveiro. If you start assessing other people, you start judging other people. The trick is not in what we ultimately say. Whatever's in our head ultimately is going to come out. It's very hard to hold things in. The trick is to think properly, to see properly, to look at the world a little bit with rose-colored glasses. To see positivity wherever we look, and then positivity will emanate from us. It's very natural, nearly irresistible. It's a human inclination to ultimately speak whatever's on our mind. The trick is to nip it in the bud before it becomes a thought. We shouldn't have those thoughts to begin with. I remember years ago, many years ago, I was in a car in Eretz Yisrael. I don't remember the context. But I was, at the time, my now good friend, who at the time I barely knew him, Rabbi Larry Rothwax, was engaged to his wife, to Rabbi Yudin's daughter, to Chaviva Yudin. And we were driving somewhere in Eretz Yisrael, and it was like, I don't know if it was like near Ben Yehuda or something. I don't know what the context was. I have no, this may have been a dream, maybe it didn't really happen. But I seem to remember this, that there were people that were not such B'nai Torah, you know, in the neighborhood around the car, to put it mildly. And someone in the car said, it may have been me, it may have been someone else, that said, oh, look at this chil of the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. This is what's happening. And Rabbi Rothwack said, no, I'm getting adjusted to this. I'm a son-in-law of Rabbi Yudin. Rabbi Yudin would say, look at all these holy neshamos. Look at all these precious Yidin. Hamaragel b'chaveiro. If you see negativity, negativity is going to come out. But if you see something positive, then something positive will come out. You know, you have such a concept. We're right now coming up on Shivas Ubatamas, which is a negative time in the calendar. It's a difficult time in the calendar. And you know, the Gemara and the Mishnah in the end of Tainus connects the way we feel in Chodesh Av with the way we feel in Chodesh Adar. That Misha Nichnas Adar Marbin Besimcha. So, what does that mean? Does that mean that we have a mitzvah to increase our level of simcha? Or is it just like a description of the avira of the day? That when Adar comes, it's like there's automatic simcha. Nafkamina is, do you have to do something? Do you have to actually be mesameach? Do you have to drink wine when Misha Nichnas Adar? So on the one hand, kishem shemisha nichnasa v'matin b'simcha, kach misha nichnasa adar marbin b'simcha. So it sounds like you have to do something. Because when Av comes in, you have to cease from doing certain things. But on the other hand, the idea that you should delay a court case with an achri until Adar or something like that implies that it's natural to the day, that it's just something that's an outgrowth of the day. And as is often the case, whenever you have a question where there are two extremes, the answer is probably both. There are probably two divin. There are two things about Adar. It's a requirement to have a riboy simcha, but it's also a time of mazel for a Jew. But then the question becomes, which brings about which? Is it a time of good mazel because we are happy, or are we happy because it's a time of good mazel? There's a maral in Parsha Shoftim, where the maral has a critical insight. He comments on the pasuk that talks about a chassid not going to Melchama lest he die in war, and ish acher yikachena, and then another man is going to take his wife. And Rashi says the reason we emphasize that the other guy will marry her, after all, once he's dead, why does it matter so much to him what happens next, is mipnei agmas nefesh. Rashi says the problem is agmas nefesh. What does that mean? So the Maral explains that the reason we emphasize agmas nefesh and paint such a sad picture is that the risk of death is not really what exempts him from war. It's the sad thought that he will bring to the battlefield that exempt him from war. That if he's going to be thinking while he's going out on the battlefield all sorts of sad thoughts of what would be if I die, what would be with my almana, what would be the sad thought of the guy dying and his young almana having to get remarried, that will cause the troops to be sad. And the Maral says, Dover ze goreim lemisa. You know why he's going to die? Because he went in thinking he's going to die. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. The thought that their comrade might die and his wife will end up with some other guy will cause his fellow soldiers, to suffer from anxiety. And that will be why they won't be successful in war. And the Maral is telling us something fabulous, something amazing, something huge. That simcha brings good mazel and sadness brings bad mazel. It's not, as we often think, you know, there's a wonderful book written by an author by the name of Sean Aker, I think is his name. It's called The Happiness Advantage. I strongly recommend it. Okay, if you're not going to read the book, TED Talk. There's a TED Talk, it's only 15 minutes of your time. The Happiness Advantage. And he describes how people often think that if only I had this, I would be happy. If only I could accomplish this, I would be happy. And it never really works that way. Because what happens if we accomplish that? We just move the goalposts further back. Oh no, I didn't mean that. If I could accomplish that. If only I could be a millionaire. Did I say million? I mean 10 million. Did I say 10 million? I mean 100 million. I mean that I'm going to have covered also. That I'm going to have we're just going to move the goalposts. It's not that when good things happen to us, we are happy. It's not because we become happy because good things happen to us. Good things happen to us when we're happy. When a person is positive, when a person is happy, they bring about good mazel. Optimism breeds success. Rav Dessler writes in Michtam Eliyahu, Chelik Beis, page 123, that being marbe besimcha breeds haslacha. And if you're happy, it's easier to give. And that's why machsa shekel happens in Adar, even though it's really a Nisan mitzvah to have the new shkalim, to buy the new karbanos. It happens in Adar, because in Adar there's riboy simcha, and when there's riboy simcha, a person's happy, and when a person's happy, he's loving. And when a person is loving, the person becomes a giver. The antidote to Lashon Hara is not silence. It's to find positive things to say. And this is, it's a good exercise to do. If you're ever... You know, sometimes if I'm in a supermarket, if my wife sends me to go shopping, which I used to do all the time, and now I work in the city, it's much harder, so I don't do it so much. But it used to happen all the time. I'd be in the supermarket, and I would see, a woman from the neighborhood. So, I'm not going to sit there schmoozing with women the whole time. It's not my style so much. So, but of course, polite, hello, how you doing? Nice to see you. But then, like, you're online the whole time. Awkward. It's just like, what do I do with these moments? I'm looking at my phone, Well, this is very important. What do you do? So there's something you can do. I realized I could tell her something really nice about her husband. You know, it's amazing how your husband comes on time to davening all the time, no matter how busy he is. It's amazing the kind of chesed he does quietly when nobody else is looking. Meaning, you have these moments. You're just there. You have, just think of something nice to say. And you can help someone's shalom bayis. You could tell, you see someone, a parent of a friend of yours, you say, oh, I love your child. They are so amazing. They helped me in a difficult time or whatever. I remember once when the first time Rav Schachter came to my house for a Shabbos, I remember a guy from the shul went over to them. It was before Shai moved to the neighborhood. So someone came over to them and said, your son Shai helped me in a very difficult time. And the Rebbetzin like lit up and said, Herschel, get over here! Get over here! Because they're parents also. You can say something positive and then they'll have nachas. And we all have the capacity to do that, to just bring positive energy. That's the antidote to Lashon Hara. To think of things, think about how sweet life could be, how sweet our Torah can be when we view it in this in this positive way. So yeah, this program is all about Kedushas HaDibur, but it's more than Dibur, it's about an attitude. And I'll tell you something, it's not only Bin Adam L'Chavera. Our attitude to the Ribbono Shelolam, to his Torah, also has a tremendous impact. When people think of the Ribbono Shelolam as like this scary being that's waiting to punish me, and that gave me all of these restrictions that make life so difficult, so a person's not going to be able to keep that up for very long. And there's a beautiful story. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zichrono Levracha, was at a chumash play for a great-grandchild of his. So what do you do if you're like running a preschool and like you have the siddur play or the chumash play and Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky walks in? Like, on the one hand, it's a very challenging thing for a principal, no? On the one hand, if Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky walks in, you can't not have him do something or speak or something because he's like one of the Gedolei Hador. On the other hand, what's Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky going to say to four-year-olds? Like, how's that going to work? What's he going to say to five-year-olds? But they had no choice. They asked him to speak. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was brilliant. And he said to the children, he said, I don't know, maybe 5, 6 years, what age do you get a chumash? I don't know, whatever age they were. So he said, you know, when the Jewish people were offered the Torah, they said, Na'ase v'nishma. They didn't say, E'ase v'eshma, that I will do and I will hear. They said, we will do and we will hear. How could they speak for everybody else? Each person at the same time knew that we're all going to do it? So he took out a piece of chocolate from his pocket. Why he carried chocolate around his pocket? Hey, even Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky likes chocolate. He took out a piece of chocolate from his pocket. And he said, who wants the chocolate? And all the boys screamed, I do! And one boy said, we all do! And he said, how do you know? He put his zero in, he got what he wanted. It had not been for that. How do you know that you all do? How can you say that everybody else says, because chocolate's amazing! Something's wrong. You know, the people that don't like chocolate, those are the people that like black jelly beans. That's disgusting. their chocolate is amazing. We all do. And Yaakov said, yeah. When we saw those kolos at Har Sinai, we all do. Na'ase v'nishma. We were able to look with this positive way at what the Ribbono Shel Olam was offering us. He was offering us the guidebook for life. He was offering us an opportunity to connect with him. So we should see it in our Ben Adam L'Makom. We should see it in our Ben Adam L'Chavero. And we should see that the greatest way to fight the Yetzer Hara, which is such an overwhelming Yetzer Hara that Matisseo Solomon thought that that's what Ribbono Shel Olam was armed with to make it more challenging for us. The Yetzer Hara for Lashon Hara, the greatest way to fight it is with Lashon Tov. And Lashon Tov doesn't come from the lips, it comes from the thoughts, it comes from the eyes, it comes from what we're meragel, what we look out for, what we seek out. And when we seek positive, we become positive people. We become the kinds of people that Rav Yisrael Reisman said are the builders, the people who brought us here to this day in America where we have so much Torah and so much Frumkeit in our communities. Because of people who were able to see positive while others were only seeing negative. And Be'ez Hashem, through that, we should come to an even greater connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam throughout the rest of our lives.